Welcome to Talkin' Docs, the monthly show where we dive into the world of documentaries and review them for your listening pleasure. Why documentaries, you may ask? Well, documentaries have the power to inform, educate, and entertain us in ways that few other mediums can. They allow us to delve deep into a subject, explore different perspectives, and challenge our assumptions. But with so many documentaries out there, it can be overwhelming to decide what to watch. That's where we come in. On Talkin' Docs, we'll cover a wide range of topics, from politics and social issues to art, science, and nature. So whether you're a seasoned documentary buff or just dipping your toe into the genre, Talkin' Docs is the perfect place to discover new films, expand your horizons, and join the conversation about the world around us.
Hi, welcome to Talkin' Docs. My name is Jennifer Smith. I'm here with my wonderful co-hosts, Logan Croslin and Cowboy Roger. How are you boys?
Doing well tonight. A lot less depressed going into this one than our last one. But always, as always, looking forward to talking about it with you guys.
We went beauty for before age there. Logan yes, going before me. Okay. I'm doing great, Jenny. Logan, hope you guys are doing well as well. Looking forward to this. Doing
good. It's interesting that you say that you're less depressed. Talking about a different serial killer. I just wonder why that is. You know, just it's the cannibalism, right?
It's the like methodical nature of what in which Dahmer did it, and he ate people and all that kind of stuff. I feel like at least at the beginning she had a reason, or who we're talking about tonight had a reason for doing what she did, and then it just kind of tailspun on her. But yeah.
All right, so yeah, we're talking about an infamous serial killer because she is a rare woman serial killer. I called her the first in some of the news coverage and stuff from the documentary. She's definitely not the first woman serial killer, but definitely one of the most famous. And her name is Eileen Wuornos, and we watched the documentary. It's called Life and Death of a Serial Killer. On AMC Plus, you can look it up. There's several different spots for that. Some you can do for free. Some you might have to do a little 7-day trial subscription for. Mm-hmm. So we watched that for a documentary, and then we watched a friend of the pod, you know, since from our octopus episode, Charlize Theron. We watched her.
God, I forgot about that.
We named her Charlize. So
that's right.
Because she was South African.
Yeah, she was South African.
Mm-hmm. What and, a nice little callback there, Jenny.
I know, right?
That was good. Yeah, I forgot about that.
I do one podcast and I completely forgot about that. You do 100 and remember. That's why you're in the captain's chair, Jenny.
Yeah.
When I name an octopus, I'm probably going to remember that. So that sticks out. So we're watching her award-winning performance in Monster. So, very interesting watching these back to back. Definitely less of a time investment than Dahmer was, mm-hmm. as that was a series and this is a movie. So, and we found that I watched it on Fossum. I know Logan said Crackle and maybe Freevee might have it. So, it's around for mm-hmm. free. And it's a quick watch, and it's not as disturbing as some things that I've seen, but also an amazing performance by her in that movie.
Oh yeah, 1,000%. And that, you know, they made her up real good or real bad, I guess. but they made her really look like Eileen, and it was pretty incredible how they did it. You almost couldn't even tell it was her at points. So. And yeah, she nails the character for sure. After watching the documentary, kind of seeing what she's like, she almost wasn't kooky enough, which is saying something because she was pretty right. kooky in the movie. But I feel like, you know, the real person was even a level above maybe what she did. But it was still a great performance. She totally deserved to be up for any kind of award, and I would even say she definitely deserved to win it. I don't really know what she was against that year, but she did a really good job.
They kind of ended the movie with her receiving the death sentence, basically. Right. And I think, like, what you're discussing, Logan, with her kind of her mental illness progressing was after that. More so
after that.
Like when she was interviewed in the documentary, it was like she was on death row and it was like near her execution. And you don't know how much there were points in that documentary where she was very contradictory to herself, and it really wasn't clear what she was like. So it seemed like she was like kind of trying to run an angle at certain points, but I mean, the mental illness, I mean, it was pretty convincing if she was trying to run an angle, but Charlize Theron was incredible. Just, she transformed, and it's a very sad story, you know, like this is one where, you know, like, I think we talked last time, you know, like Jeffrey, I think was kind of just born that way. Mm-hmm. And Eileen, I don't know that you can say that. I think that the stuff that happened to her in her life from a very, very young age probably made her into what she was. And she wasn't like a serial killer. Like, she's a serial killer because she killed multiple people, right? But she's not, at least to me, didn't strike me as the serial killer type who was like getting off on killing the people.
Right.
She was tortured. She would kill them. She wasn't, and she wasn't torturing them. She was killing them and taking their money.
Right.
It's kind of up in the air how the first one happened, because she said it was like it was in the movie, which is one of the more horrible things I've ever kind of seen on a screen, where she was being raped and tortured. And then she walked that back in the documentary, but I believe she then walked it back again after that. And in the doc, it was really interesting. Sorry, I don't mean to talk so much, but in the documentary, it was really interesting that the documentarian seemed to know her maybe better than anybody, where when she walked back the story about being assaulted by the first man, he said, you know, she's recently expressed that she just wants to die. And this is her way of, you know, this, I just want to die. So if I say that none of this was self-defense, I just need to come clean, they're going to kill me quicker.
Right. So the documentarian is a guy named Nick Broomfield, and he had made a movie called The Selling of a Serial Killer. And that was back in 1992. So this documentary references his film, and it's kind of like a part two. Because the point of their documentary is the documentary maker and several other people are called as witnesses to her final parole hearing. So that's the setting of the documentary. And then we get to kind of, we didn't watch that original Selling of a Serial Killer, but you kind of got to see the point of it and how you felt that Nick totally bought into her story, that she was raped and that she murdered out of self-defense. You felt like he bought that. And this time he's telling us that no, she's walked all that back. She's not a defense killer. And then you could see Nick going, well, what the fuck? Because you lied, you know, and he was trying to wrap his mind around that and change his opinion of her, really. And then the whole time during the parole hearing, she wants to die. So she doesn't want anybody coming to her defense, but she has a lawyer that wants to put up a defense for her and save her. And she hates him. She doesn't want anything to do with her lawyer, nothing to do with Nick or anybody else that tries to help her, right? Mm-hmm. And in her time in prison, she came up with all these conspiracy theories about how the police knew that she was a serial killer and they let her continue to kill people, which is absolutely batshit insane. And but they kept having her evaluated and evaluated, and you know, they found her competent. Everybody found her competent to face, you know, the death penalty. And then they, you know, had to carry that out. And it was, the documentary, I thought, had a lot of tension in it from Eileen herself, because she's a speaker like Trump is a speaker, right? Like, you just want to, like, listen to the the combination of words that somehow form sentences or thoughts sometimes. Like, it's just kind of fascinating to watch her speak. I don't know if you guys were struck by that at all, but she always seemed like I didn't trust anything that she said, basically.
No, I mean, like it did seem like she was running an angle at all times.
Yeah.
But I think the movie was fair in their hypothesis about what happened, because I did, like, just if you piece together what she said and then what some of the witnesses said, like, I think there's a pretty good chance that the first killing probably was self-defense.
I kind of am in that camp too.
But then pretty clearly after that, she was doing, I mean, it seemed like she was doing it for money in a lot of ways, just to take care of her girlfriend.
Right. It was PTSD too, because she thought that every other John was going to, you know, do the same thing.
Maybe that's what she said, but
right.
Like, I mean, that you don't know, but yeah. I thought, like, to me, the most powerful stuff in the documentary wasn't in the movie. And you brought it up, Jenny, in the documentary, it's basically a hearing to try to vacate her death penalty, I believe, right? Is what they're trying to do. Like Jenny said, she's fighting her own defense.
Yes.
So, and I don't know if some of this is because she knows what they're going to testify about, but it was absolutely heartbreaking. They had, I mean, she's probably 45-ish something years old, right? And they put people up there that she grew up with who, I mean, it would have to be a pretty wide-ranging conspiracy for these people to go up there and say the stuff that they did.
Right.
There's a guy openly talked about, like, what he did with her when she was when she was young, and he was young, and all the other guys in the neighborhood were there. And I think he said her brother, I believe, was one of these people.
He said she was having sex with her brother.
Yeah. And it was, and then she got pregnant at 13, and that made her a pariah, and gave the baby up for adoption. That made her a pariah, and she lived in the woods at 13. And it's just, I mean, what she did is wrong, obviously. You shouldn't kill people. But, I mean, that kind of trauma is just so, so heartbreaking. It was just brutal to even listen to. And that is certainly the kind of thing that could trip somebody's brain into,
yes,
you know, men are going to hurt me, so I'm going to hurt them first.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really sad story. It's just horrible.
Allegedly they had kind of mentioned that the town pervert is how they put it, was allegedly the father of her baby and had been molesting her. You know, there's a scene in the movie where before she kills somebody, she, you know, says, you know, I got raped when I was a little girl and my dad beat me for it, you know. And they talk a lot about her mother who died, and then her dad allegedly blamed her for the mother's death, and there was abuse there. I think she was just abused her entire life, and this is kind of what happens when people fucking snap. They do something crazy, and that's all she ever knew, was selling herself to get by. She did it as a child. She did it her whole life. And she couldn't take it anymore. I think she just snapped.
Yeah, I don't know how it was phrased in the movie, but she said that was just like how she had to learn how to live. Like, that's the only way she could figure out how to make any money at a young age. And she did it her whole life. She was always out on the roads, you know, trying to find the next, you know, person that would pay her to do whatever they needed her to do at the time. So yeah, just a really sad upbringing. Did her mom die or did she just bail? I can't remember.
They interviewed that. She was in the documentary.
Yeah.
I think that's her stepmom, because.
I think you're right.
Okay. Well, one of them, born again Christian, that was
her stepmom.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah. She was, I didn't like her either.
She was nuts.
But, Yeah, you know, she never really had a chance to be normal at all, really, because she didn't, you know, she just didn't have a normal upbringing, and the friend that like is doing like the funeral arrangements, but when she's about to get executed and all that, talks about a time when she just got like put over a chair and her dad just beat the absolute mess out of her. Now Eileen, she denied it, of course. Mm-hmm. She said her father was a great man and all that kind of stuff. But I don't think you kind of make that kind of shit up. I think that's something you can't unsee, and it kind of mm-hmm. lives with you. But yeah, just a lot of trauma led up to those moments. And, you know, the assault of the first killing, mm-hmm. yeah, that was definitely tough to watch on the movie. But, you know, I mean, she did what she had to in that moment. She shot the guy. Now, should she have reported it in some way? Probably, but they might have, you know, not taken her word because of kind of who she was and what she was. Yeah, I mean, that was terrible to watch. But I feel like that one was somewhat justified, especially if it really happened like that. I wouldn't like to think it did, but for the fact that she killed the guy, I would like to think she had a reason to do it.
I was just trying to see the names of how many victims she actually ended up being.
It's seven or eight.
I think it was
eight.
Seven. I think it was yeah.
Seven, too. That's what I kept thinking. Seven men. So the MO would be to just pick, you know, get hitchhike, you know, and to get picked up, show pictures, you know, fake pictures. These are my kids in Miami. I'm trying to make some money to get back to them. So that was her little spiel to try to, you know, see if the dude wanted to pay for sex. And then they would drive off because she worked this main highway in Florida, the interstate there. So heavily traveled. I've been on that road a bunch. So it's crazy, but and they would drive off in the woods and she would shoot them, rob them. It didn't really show in, you know, in the movie how she got rid of the cars, like, or
I think she kept the cars in some cases.
Did she just have like a bunch of fucking cars,
but then would ditch them, right? Remember, because they crashed one of the cars, and she hadn't told her girlfriend yet, and they had to get out of there. Mm-hmm. Ironically, and I thought this was the case, I was just looking it up, the first victim in the movie, the actor who played him, was also Tobias Beecher on the prison show, Oz. I don't know if you, mm-hmm. either of you have watched Oz.
I haven't seen it, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, victim of a horrific sexual attack. He was the victim. He's the one, he had a swastika like tattooed on his rear end by one of the like Aryan Brotherhood people in Oz. So he's been in a couple of like the worst freaking scenes, like in the history of Hollywood on both sides. So
damn.
But yeah, that was a brutal scene to watch for sure.
Yeah, it was. That was rough.
You know, you don't blame her for shooting the guy at that point.
Fuck no.
Yeah, that was pretty reprehensible what he did. So that's what I was saying earlier. I think that one was justified, that the fact that she kept doing it and for the reason she kept doing it made it much worse. But I think that first one was more than justified.
So we meet in the movie, we meet her lifetime love, apparently, or, you know, another lady comes in the picture later when she's in prison. But in the movie, her name was Selby, but I think her real name was Tyra.
Correct. There was probably some type of rights thing where they couldn't use the real name.
Selby, played by Christina Ricci. I thought she was excellent. And she and Eileen meet in a bar, in a gay bar, in a great scene. And they just end up connecting. And, you know, it turns out that Selby was from like a Christian family. And, you know, she was gay, but she didn't want to be out to her family, and she was kind of stuck in hiding, and she meets Eileen, and who's not even gay apparently to her, but then you meet the right person and then you're gay for them. So I guess I don't know, but because Eileen said, you know, she wasn't even gay.
Mm-hmm. She had been, you know, there was probably just so much pain there that, like,
right, yeah,
she was just that happy to connect, I think.
Right.
I mean, that she obviously felt a special connection with this person who ultimately sold her down the river.
Betrayed her. Yes.
Like,
so
big time. Like, that was the way it was portrayed in the movie. I'm like, it couldn't have been that bad, right? But nope, the documentary confirmed. It was worse because in the movie they don't talk about how she also tried to, like, profit and sell the story, which is
right. Mm-hmm. So she, they, like, hook up. They try to make it in a hotel for a while. They get a place, and she's just hooking and killing, and eventually tells the girlfriend. So, I mean, in my mind, the girlfriend is complicit in some of this stuff. Like, I don't know what you guys feel. If somebody confessed murder to you, if your wife confessed this to you, what would you do? I mean,
I wouldn't just do nothing, which is, I think, what Selvi / Tyra did, right? I mean,
she profited from it. She took the money from the victims that Eileen would bring home.
That's a tough situation to be in. I mean,
yeah,
who knows how we'd react? But she did nothing.
No,
and she did nothing, and then basically just sold Eileen down the river. Once Eileen got caught, they used Selvi to put Eileen to death.
That phone call sealed
the deal, like, completely sealed the deal.
Yep.
Eileen
knew it too.
And that was I don't think you can say what Selvi did was honorable in really any way, right? Like, she probably should have done is gone to the cops right away. Then you're at least saving some people's lives, right? Who, like, ever got killed after Eileen had told her.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get her to stop.
Try to get her to stop. If you're not going to go to the police, then at least go, don't ever do that again. You know, like, I'm out of here. Like, I will go to the cops if you ever do that again. She didn't do that. I mean, allegedly, from what it was portrayed in the movie. And based on her actions, I tend to believe that.
Yeah. And I mean, the fact that she didn't do anything, I think, does make her criminally liable.
Which
leads to that phone call, because I believe that they gave her, like, immunity, right?
And she was state's witness.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's always better to do the right thing first. If you can.
I mean, you know, if she doesn't call or, like, at least threaten, hey, I'm calling the next time you say something like this. I could get maybe hiding the first one, but once she starts telling her the others,
Logan's good with one murder. Anything beyond that, we're out of bounds.
What has Brooke been up to? So I'm just saying.
Jesus Christ. Well, I'm just saying, like, she got raped, and I honestly think that was self-defense. So, I mean, like, whatever you want to say about that. But she told her about that one. She told her the story, what happened.
Yeah.
Justified.
But, you mean she was justified in that murder?
Yeah, yes. Okay. Yes. I mean, I think so.
Okay. I'm on board with that.
Yeah, but she, at some point in the movie, she tells her again that she's getting this money from people that she's killing and robbing. That's when you call the cops, you could say, okay, you did this out of self-defense. That's okay with me. I can live with that. But if you do it again, I'm turning you in. Mm-hmm. That's when it needs to happen.
And she kept trying to convince her that every man was going to do it, you know, eventually or whatever. Mm-hmm. And trying to have some sort of justification for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Um, Let's see what else we got. The lawyers that Eileen had in the documentary, and then they kept calling back to that 1992 film, and there was some shady stuff. All that shit that they did when she was in jail trying to sell her story was despicable. She was, you know, she's in jail. They made people pay for interviews and, you know, to try to cover the legal fees. And
these lawyers, I mean, I've watched a number of these kind of documentaries, and some of these defense lawyers that they get for these people charged with murder, like what this guy, like the guy with the perm,
mm-hmm.
the yes, first guy. They yes. said he was like on TV, but like had no idea how to be an actual defense attorney.
Right, right.
Like part of the defense was that he was like real high, yeah. right? Like, right. like that was part of the hearing was this guy was like too high to provide sound legal defense. That yeah. like that there should be like some standard there yes. where yeah. like if somebody's like obviously incompetent, like you have to like. Force them to get somebody else, because the guy that she had in this documentary was, you know, he seemed like a competent attorney.
Right, right.
Had her best interest at heart. This guy had her plead guilty, but didn't do a plea bargain. So she pled guilty just to get the death penalty. Like that, you shouldn't be like even really be able to do that.
No, you
right?
shouldn't.
Because if they're going to give you the death penalty, you might as well plead not guilty, because right. that's the worst penalty. So you really don't gain anything by pleading guilty.
Right.
Yeah. And the guy looked like a ripoff of like Bob Ross with that hair.
Oh yeah, it was bad. Yeah, it was like an fat infant. Bob Ross.
And the documentarian mentioned that he liked him personally. He said he was a hippie. That yeah, he's a night, but he's just like that. In way over his head. And they said he was doing it probably for the notoriety. Mm-hmm. But there's been a number of cases like that where these. Like literally, I think like one of us with zero legal background could go in and do like three or four times better of a job than this person. Like I think it was it the West Memphis Three?
Oh that, shit! Yeah,
that was ridiculous, right?
Like, yeah. Oh yeah, that story is a nightmare.
And she hired the guy like off of like an infomercial or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. Yeah, because you know, she doesn't know better. She's yeah. a dumb hick. I mean, really, she is.
She could have used the lawyer to tell her to not freaking say anything to her yes, girlfriend on the phone yes. when she's in prison.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And it was like public access, like low yeah. grade bullshit commercial too. Like,
in the
full shit.
That's one thing I disagreed with in the movie. So in the movie, they really intimated that during that phone conversation yeah. that Eileen knew what was going on and did it kind of to say, and they, basically made the decision to
yeah.
to say that stuff on the phone to screw herself to save
right.
Selby.
Right.
It didn't really seem like that was the case
you
for the real life story.
Hmm.
You think that she knew, or you think I felt like Selby just tricked her into saying the stuff. And
it's hard Eileen's, to tell.
Yeah.
Because she's not smart, but she has that savvy, that street mm-hmm. savvy, that allows you to live as long as she did and to kill as many people as she killed. Maybe the movie did romanticize it, you know.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for sure.
Yeah. But she did want to die, so...
There's we never that. Did find out. I think she really only wanted to die after they
sentenced her
to death, which yeah. again, like she in the documentary, it said after that phone call,
right?
She just kind of that
faded.
Was that played guilt, right. pled guilty, called it a day. Bob Ross didn't help her,
right?
And yeah, but it's a real interesting, just a real interesting story. And I don't know.
Yeah, the upbringing definitely has a lot to do with this, and
that's the one that, like, not to go back, but that's the thing that makes Dahmer. So I think, like Logan said, depressed. And I don't know. I mean, in yeah, a lot of ways, I think this was a, like a more almost a more depressing story. from the eyes of the killer, right? Mm-hmm. I felt like a million times more worse for Eileen than I did for Dahmer.
Right.
For the victims, victims, yeah. I felt significantly more worse.
Right.
So, like Eileen's victims, I'm not saying they deserve to die at all.
No,
but they were not exact. Like
they weren't
Dahmer's
tortured.
Victims were just like trying to have a good time. Mm-hmm. These people were, you know, picking
trying
up
to
a
get
street
their
hooker.
Up, but yeah,
right. Like you know. Like I think they were all married, and like one of them was a cop. And like again, they don't deserve to die. But on the scale of the guy at the club who's just looking to like make a friend and hang out versus, you know, sexually exploiting somebody on the highway at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, like there's a difference there. But the thing with Dahmer, I think that's so scary. It makes me uncomfortable more than depressed, but uncomfortable, is that, okay, his parents got divorced. You know, my parents got divorced, right? A lot of people's parents got divorced. There's really no explanation for him. Mm. And to think that there are people walking around, right? And it's just like the luck of the draw, you know, it's like losing the lottery, essentially, that this could be anybody, right?
Anybody, yeah.
And that is a crazy thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Eileen, like it was, I think, pretty clearly she was turned into what she became versus Jeffrey, who I think no matter what situation he was born into, no matter what his life was, that was what that his was, compulsion was, and that's what he was going to do.
Right. It's definitely different when the killing is the way that you get off, like with the sexual component to it in that way. That's because that drive will make people do things, you know, that are insane. And somebody like Eileen was just robbing people, you know, she wasn't getting off on the kills.
Yeah. And you know, Dahmer's ultimate thing was trying to like make a human zombie that like wouldn't leave him, so that makes it a little more chilling as well. But yeah, I mean, I think the PTSD from that first first kill really hung. I think Jenny, you said that earlier, I think that really just kind of hung with her, and you know, it became a money thing, and she was so desperate to keep Selby happy and keep her in her life that like that was the only way she could get money, because she tries to get jobs in the movie.
I wasn't a huge fan of those scenes either. I felt it was a little dramatization. Did that actually happen? Did she go into like an office and like flip out and tell the guy
see
to go
her doing it,
himself
though.
Oh yeah, you could, yes, you know, for sure.
But anyway, it seemed like she was trying to do something normal and good. Now, maybe she didn't go to the right places. Maybe she didn't search out the right jobs. It seemed like she was trying to get money in an honest way. But she realized none of that shit was working. She was desperate. So she was like, well, I killed this one guy. At least maybe I can make up that all of these were self-defense. And, you know, then she just started killing. Like that one guy didn't even want sex. He was really just trying to get her where she needed to go.
That was rough.
The real nice old man, you know.
Yes.
She just kind of kills him in cold blood. But,
so what they're showing there is her progression, right? Because there was another person like that earlier in the movie who she let go, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, he was like special needs, I think, or something like that.
I said, I've never done this before, yada, yada, right? And she did not kill him. But then this other guy who like wasn't even going to do anything with her sexually, she did kill. So I think that was trying to show it's getting easier and easier for her. Mm-hmm. You know, she's sliding more and more into that serial killer.
Yeah, that's the real point of no return, for sure.
Yeah, you're right.
I think it became super easy at that point. She cried and like was emotional about it, but I think, you know, she still did it. I think it got easier for her at that point.
And then we talked about it off recording, but one of the things they talk about a lot in the documentary is, and Jenny alluded to it, is folks trying to profit by selling the story, like including like police officers, like lost their jobs for trying to sell the story, and you know, the movie rights, America's first serial killer. Yeah. So I think all of us watched the movie first.
Yes.
And so didn't really have that in our mind. But like looking back, they don't really make it clear in the documentary. And I can't really tell from the movie who sold the story. Like
I can't tell either.
Whose story is it? I think the person in the movie who comes off better than they did in real life is the girlfriend. Mm. So that's my guess, is that she at least profited from this somehow.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe she like pondered or like made
maybe
it.
Maybe had some creative direction or.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she like went through somebody else so it didn't seem like she was immediately profiting off of it, but it was, I don't know.
Maybe used Bob Ross as a front.
I mean, oh, another fucking part that slayed me in the documentary was the Nick guy goes to like shake the hands of the shitty lawyer, and he goes, ah, fuck you. And he won't shake his hand. And he won't talk to him. He's like, don't talk to me. And he got this big grin on his face the whole time because the cameras are going, and mm-hmm. he's looking right at the cameras talking to this guy, grinning like a fool, saying, fuck you, don't talk to me. Like, because his first movie must have made him look like an absolute douche. Mm-hmm. So,
and he says he likes the guy.
I know
that guy. I mean, he didn't have to do too much to make the guy look like that.
Yeah,
the guy was useless. The guy was getting wasted on the way to court for a death penalty case.
The seven joint drive or something.
Yeah, the seven joint ride or whatever.
Yeah. And then it like that. Oh god, that the prosecutors. I mean, I watch some of these things, and I'm like, I don't know how these people even keep a straight face. They're like arguing, well, his shirt's different.
Yeah.
And the guy, the documentary guy goes, you know, well, he was going somewhere official, so he put on a button-down shirt, so he must have changed his shirt.
Yeah.
And they said, or maybe you were doing your cutting and your pasting, and you kind of cut and paste these things from two different days together. Like,
that was
like, you, like it was like... Like, who are these people? Like, I mean, I know it was 2003, but like editing a video had been around for quite a long time. And what's more possible in 2003, especially like you saw the quality of this documentary. It wasn't exactly 4K, right?
Yeah.
And is that this documentarian did like this super slick edit that you couldn't even tell, even though he seems like a, you know, there's no reason to question him. Right. Mm-hmm. Or numbnuts just changed his shirt when he was high as a kite to put on the shirt and probably didn't tuck it in to go into court. Like, which one is it?
It smelled like weed. The shirt
smelled
like
weed. Yeah,
maybe
he was trying to mask the smell somehow.
And then, of course, like, then he just does the voiceover that says, we went back and reviewed all our footage, and he did, in fact, change his shirt. Well, I mean, it's great that you say it in the documentary, but did, like, somebody tell the court that at any point? Like the prosecutor thought he was, like, I mean, honestly, it reminded me of, like, Scooby-Doo, honestly. Right. Like, he was like, gotcha! You were doing your cutting and your pasting. Like, you have got to be kidding me.
It's like it's like the oldest of old man's trying to describe how to put a video together, or trying to understand how to put a video together.
But the way they railroad people, at least, I mean, and maybe it's the way these documentaries are framed, I don't know, but I've seen a number of them where it feels like people really get railroaded in court. Mm. And then in this one, like, I get it, right? It's basically that defense attorney against the prosecution, the judge, and his own client. Mm-hmm. So it's real tough. It's going to be a tough one to win. And you're in, and then this is nothing against the state of Florida, right?
Well,
but, not a state that is known for, you know, like liberalism and, you know, anti-death penalty stuff, right? Like, I think essentially, like, everybody but the defense attorney just wanted to, you know,
get
out of there as quickly as possible and just keep things the way they were.
And Jeb Bush, he was in the documentary, like footage of him and talking about how she, you know, he was determined that she was going to be executed. You know, he really kind of had it out for her.
Yeah, but or I mean, there's another way to look at it. Like it's very complex, that issue, mm-hmm. because in her case, especially in her case, like what if you really wanted to punish her, you're giving her exactly what she wants.
Right.
Exactly yeah. what she wants as quickly yeah. as possible. Right. And I think they even say that, like Jeb even kind of says something like that, like, hey, she really wants to meet her maker. So we're going to yeah. help her out with that. Like
that is was that, out of
it was some, something to that effect. Right. And it was,
yeah, it was something.
So like now really she's a killer and you're yeah. handing down the harshest sentence possible. Should part of that be we're giving her exactly what she wants? Probably not. Right.
Yeah.
It's a story for another day.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, they should have let her sit in there and sit and sit and sit, and she would have just been more and more miserable and gone more, you know, more and more off the rails.
I mean, and so, like, there's an argument, there's, and then this is not an argument for this show, but there's an argument that in that way it's more humane, right? Is it more humane than a life sentence in prison? I don't know. It's, but in this case, though, there's no arguing that she was doing everything she possibly could to have that sentence imposed on her
yes.
as quickly as humanly possible.
Yeah. Once it got laid. Yeah. She was definitely, she wanted to die as quickly as possible, no matter what it took.
And to have Jeb come out and say the way he did,
yeah,
she wants to meet her maker. We're going to help that along. And I might not be quoting it directly, but it's
it
close.
Was something like it was that. Something to that effect, 'cause I threw yeah. up in my mouth a little bit.
It's a you know, not a great. I don't think a great look.
Not a great political statement there.
Plus, it's Jeb Bush.
Yeah, yeah. There was one other part that's kind of, you know, like you said, Jenny, kind of slayed me. The guy Nick was coming off the witness stand, I think, and he went to go shake her hand, and there was like either a cop or a bailiff or an attorney, but he goes to shake her hand, and she just smacks his hand.
Yes,
away.
Yeah. She says, "Fuck you, dude."
She said, "Fuck you. You can't shake her hand right now. You could be handing her something or whatever."
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious.
I thought it was crappy.
She,
I guess that's the rule, but
yeah.
I mean, she was pretty.
I just
she was pretty aggressive. She was pretty aggressive about it, but
yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
you don't have to do it that way. Why are you gonna let? I mean, why let him get so close that he could try to shake the hand? Like, if you can't shake the hand, he was trying to be like a good guy.
Yeah,
a good comforter.
Well, yeah. There was footage of her, you know, yelling out in court. And at the end of when she got sentenced, you know, you're killing a woman who was raped and shit like that. And
that was real. Charlize did that in the movie.
Yeah, she did that. And, you know, but they show her acting out in court all the time, telling the judge there's some illegal stuff going on here and telling the judge these people are all lying. I don't want them talking about my parole here, you know. And, yeah, she was feisty all the way to the end.
Well, and she's saying the witnesses are lying.
Yes,
because
for her.
Because those witnesses, the stuff that they're saying is the kind of stuff that could potentially get that death sentence overturned.
Exactly.
And so she says, oh, that never happened. But clearly it happened. There's no like the guy especially, right, this is stuff he did when he was 13 years old or something, mm-hmm. right? And he looked, like I said, it's about 30 years later. To get up in court, you know, you're on television, you know, you're in a mm-hmm. documentary, everything else, and to say that is...
Yeah. You're not doing that unless...
Cannot be easy. You have to be doing it because you're doing the right thing, right? Right? Trying to do the right thing to make up for, you know, not doing the right thing when you were a kid.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Wow.
We get the passionate here.
Yeah, we did. Any other topics that we want to talk about with Eileen here?
Just Charlize Theron's physical transformation.
Ah, yes.
Was really incredible. Like,
it was.
I mean, I didn't look up how she did it, but she was, I mean, like, because there were scenes where, like, you know, she wasn't wearing a suit or mm-hmm. anything underneath her clothes. Like, I mm-hmm. mean, she actually like put on all weight, that weight right. and like really transformed into Eileen. I wonder what kind of like mental toll that's going to take on someone. Like, I don't, 'cause like in the last movie too, in the docuseries, Evan Peters did the same thing, but this one even more so.
Yeah. Like,
that has to, like, even the way she talked, like, her, you know, man, and saying man after, and like, to turn yourself into a monster, for not to use the same word as the movie,
nice,
has to. It has to be, like, it has to be a real mind F, you know, like, yeah, it's gonna, gonna be a little crazy, and especially Charlize. I mean, Charlize Theron's, you know, beautiful, beautiful, the women's in. You know, turned herself into not as beautiful a woman, and I thought it was an amazing performance. She very much deserved the Oscar for it. Like, if you look at her in that versus, like, say, like The Devil's Advocate, which was not that far before, just a few years before this, it's like, I mean, it is a different person.
Yeah, you almost couldn't tell. Like I said earlier, in some scenes, you can't even tell it's her.
No,
I mean, if you told me that, I probably wouldn't have believed you without looking it up. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
It was something in the eyebrows too that really sold it for me, and that really made her look like her. Like, I'm sure she had to have some sort of prosthetic or something on there, but it was seamless. Like, whatever they did to her face
definitely
totally natural. Like, it was not
the hair for me.
Yeah, especially
her hair was like this incredible, like the same.
Yeah, same.
And she even had
And that was a thing with Eileen. That we saw was that she was always, she had a thing about her hair. So, like, it kind of made me in the movie think about, wow, that hair was just spot on.
Mm-hmm. And she even had, like, her body movements. I feel like she moves around a lot when she talks.
Yes.
And,
she's very cheery.
She's like bullshitting. She, like, really, you know, kind of moves around.
A lot
of
nervous energy.
Yeah. Real nervous kind of movements whenever she kind of.
And the wide eyes, too. She's always had just the widest eyes and dark, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of people that just reading stuff that have kind of gone into these roles where they're playing real people and they kind of have, you know, fucked up parts of their lives or whatever, you know, it can really affect them mentally. I know me and Roger watched Man on the Moon from Squared Circle.
That's a different level.
Oh, yeah.
But he did the full method thing.
Yeah.
There's like real crazy stories about like.
I'm just saying, like.
Somebody said they had to meet him during like that 6 months. And it was, who was it? Was it Dave Chappelle? Somebody who was saying, I was so excited to meet Jim Carrey.
All right.
But then he wouldn't break character, and he was Andy Kaufman, and it was horrible.
Yeah, but I'm just saying something like that, when they get so deep into that character, it can really fuck them up. So I don't know really about her playing this person, but I'm sure it affected her somewhat for at least.
So I think there's only one way to go about this, Logan, as a, you know, just kind of a sign of your commitment to the show. Could you turn into John Wayne Gacy for us in the next month or so? Just from a movie perspective, right? Don't actually do anything, but just really get into
don't
it. And then if you could do the next show as John.
Okay.
Come on, that was funny. No, it's not funny.
I want him to do it.
Yeah, I'm gonna come with the hat and the face paint and stuff, so I'll get right on that.
Ah, all right. the only clown face I will allow is Pennywise.
Okay.
Ooh, Pennywise is good.
Yeah. Mm.
I'll see what I can do.
They all float down here, Jenny.
Yeah, they do. All right, what do we got to promote before we get out of here? Logan. I know Roger don't got shit, so.
We are... We're coming to the end of the first season on Linking Up Luchas.
We are.
We're going to watch Ultima Lucha tomorrow as of this recording. So we're all going to get together and live watch that one together. So looking forward to that. Highway to the Impact Zone. We just did the Genesis 2006 episode. I'm pretty sure I promoted that on the last episode as well, but we are almost actually to Turning Point 2006 on that as well. So we almost had back-to-back pay-per-view episodes, but we did the build on the one that comes out next, but the one after that that'll kind of drop probably more towards where this one's going to drop is our Turning Point 2006 episode. But just check out everything on the North South Connection and the Place of Nation Wrestling feed for sure.
I do have something, Jenny. I was at a guest spot on a show over the last week or two. I was on with JT. They're doing a countdown of the greatest WrestleMania performers ever, I believe. Yep. And
yes.
I was on a short episode with JT where we discussed Batista's excellent WrestleMania run. So I believe that's dropped. So.
Yes.
If this wasn't enough, if this show wasn't enough, and you need more of me in your life, that's where you can find it.
We all need more Roger in our life, that's for sure. And what number was Batista?
22. A little
How
low.
Do you feel about that? Okay.
When we talked through it, it was fair.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But what we talked about is that I couldn't feel more vindicated about my Batista love mm-hmm. during the Daniel Bryan run, because I was proven to be 100% right that this guy was the star and Bryan is a nobody, essentially, right?
He is a nobody, you're right.
And Batista, like immediately after that, right, a little bit after that, leaves the WWE, and now instead of it being in the WWE, he is now just one of the biggest stars in the world outside the WWE, while Bryan is one step up from fighting in high school gyms every Saturday.
Ooh,
I'm not wrong. You know I'm not wrong.
I agree with you. I've never been really on the Daniel Bryan train, but that's me.
I did one of those videos.
They carried that match, that triple threat.
Oh, yeah. But I did one of those as well based on my StreamYard name here is Logan freaking Crosland. I did Seth Rollins. He's number 18, I think. But, yeah, definitely check all those.
Oh, they had him above. But oh, I guess the big cash-in, right? That, mm-hmm. that just
Yeah, he's just had more
one magic. Moment puts him up high on the list, I get it, because it was so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When he loses to The Rock in April, that'll drop him down a couple of spots, maybe. Mm-hmm.
I also did one of those countdowns, and I swear to God, I can't remember who I did. And I was trying to remember. It was Brock Lesnar. That's who I did. I did Brock Lesnar. So that should be probably out by now. And I think Prime Mania is over by now. But we had a lot of Mania content over Mania. Mm-hmm. So if you missed any of that, go back, especially our countdowns and our lists. So for the no-so, I'm on here every Wednesday with this show, with GCW Game Changing Podcast and Exposition and X-Men Podcast. I always like to, had colon titles in my names for my shows. And also, there's a new venture of mine called the Avenge Hers Initiative, and you can find it on the Kings of Sport Patreon. Our first episode was free, and then the rest of it is, of course, a subscription. But that looks at the female characters of the MCU. So give that a listen. If you like it, subscribe and support the show. And follow me, of course, on all the socials at Jenny Position. And that's all we got. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Everyone knows she's too broken to fix her. We're shedding her skin like a boa constrictor. Oliver Titian to opals again. Oliver Fisher was ghost in the pictures. Mind obsidian, eyes viridian. Cuts in half like a prime meridian. Blood and bass on a primal lineage. Revolver press, precious ice on skin again. Whoa. All your bones smell like old photos. Why's your face frozen cold shoulders? Solo. Born to die like it was protocol. Florida skies had a rose. It's growth force and a smile just to plug the choke. And every time you spoke, it's like you wrote a poem. Cigarette picks and the mint lips like the pinprick. All alone with those skulls and poses. It's all to some arduous awesomeness, painful moments, hard adjust to change his tone, stars combust and take the toll you were doing.
anything to regain control. Now wouldn't you? Death came quick from a wooded view. Holes in the heads at your own intact. Seven doves flew slow from the open gashes. Spider webs drawn on broken glass. You chose to kill wolf the silk in new shapes or a tear shape. Born to fear them. Awful feelings make the portrait dimmer. Your swords to pierce me when the horror lingers. They tied you down and made the needle slide in. Crucified you like you're Jesus Christ. Poison plunged until your secrets died. Then they bloom inside me like a dream of mine. Still, poison from the ivy field. Never.